It is my pleasure to introduce a friend and the CAF Director Representative for Europe, Guillermo Fernandez de Soto, who is going to be chairing this last session. Everyone is looking forward to this concluding session. And I would like to pass the opportunity to Guillermo to introduce the speakers as well. So welcome, Guillermo, to the LSE.
Algo tenía yo que decir en español después de la lección que nos dio nuestro amigo entonces tengo que saludar por lo menos en inglés para que ustedes en español, para que ustedes sepan que pues, no se nos ha olvidado el español, obviamente que hablamos mejor en español que en inglés. Pero welcome, it's a pleasure to be here today. This session has the particularity that we are going to speak specifically about the challenges of Latin America. And I would like to initiate this session with these three distinguished friends and professionals with the reflection, with that I really believe that Latin America is not the same that it was in the last 20 years. And it's not the same that it's going to be in the next 10 years. But the same happened to the United States, and the same happened for Europe. And of course, we see in the last session the same happened to Asia, to China. But particularly in the case of Latin America, Europe, United States, we have a tremendous responsibility to participate and to demonstrate a great leadership in the renewal, aggiornamento of the global governance. And the question is Latin America prepared to do that? And this is a general question for our three guests today. How do you see Latin America to exercise that leadership today? And do you think that we have the will to do that? Because, as I mentioned, United States, Europe, and Latin America share the same principles and values. And today we need that leadership in this new government. We have with us today Rebecca Grispen. Rebecca is actually our Ibero-American General Secretary. She has been Vice President of this country. She's from Costa Rica. She has been Director of UNDP. And she is the best representation of a woman in this forum for Ibero-America. I really want to point it out that. Rebecca will start this discussion. We already agreed that we are going to have 10 to 12 minutes. Then we will try to answer some questions.
Thank you so much, Guillermo, and let me first congratulate CAF and LSE for this effort. It has been a wonderful day, I think, for all of us, even those of us that have been, you know, immersed in this discussion in the past. So I want really to thank all the panelists for sharing their wisdom with us today. So it's very difficult at this hour to wake you up and to say something that will add to the discussion. But let me maybe first start with one point that I think that is very important, because today we have talked about trends and risks and how the world is dramatically changing in front of our eyes. And I agree, you know. We are witnessing one of the major shifts in power, in the economy, in society. But let me say that, not only say, claim that a major omission has been done today when the analysis has been carried out. A very important and deep change in the world that has not been mentioned from all I heard once. And I was remembering this wonderful book from Stefan Zweig called The World of Yesterday. And he said that a few generations saw their world, the world they grew up in, die. He was one of them. And he said that this new world, apart from obviously the horror and fascism and the war, two main things really were central in this new world. One is that uncertainty was there to come, said Stefan Zweig in his book. And the second big indicator of the change that he was witnessing was the role of women. Nobody mentioned the role of women today. And that's a major omission, because in many of the things that were thought or said today about demographics, about the changes in the economy, in employment, in income, in, you know, the drop of poverty, women played a major role during all these decades. And not to see the deep change that is happening in societies because of the change of the role of women, because of the issue of gender, I think that is a major mistake of those that don't incorporate it in the analysis, but also I would say that is a big mistake, probably failure from all of us that have been in the feminist movement, because we have been unable to convince you. And to really, despite all the evidence, yes, that there is there, you know, we haven't been able to mainstream gender as a big and important factor of the changes that we are witnessing today. And I just want to call your attention on that, because it will be for the future, even in the need for interfaith and dialogue and whatever, the issue of gender will be a major issue to look at, and that will play a major role. I would say that Latin America has done big progress in terms of the role of women in economics, in politics, in society. Probably is one of the most progressive continents in terms of that. And that is, let me point that out, you know, Celso Amorim talked about the bright points. This is a bright point to bring in mind, because it's huge capital that was lost before, huge talent and knowledge and possibilities to, you know, to give to society that will be there for society to benefit from it. So let me just point that out as a central issue that should be there in whatever, when we analyze the trends and the good and bad of the world today. You know that I received from Angela Camacho a quote from the vice president of Microsoft, because we were talking about that behind your backs. And some of us were shocked. And so she sent me this quote from the vice president of Microsoft. And let me just read it to you. She says, we all have to think about the emerging markets. And you probably have been given a lot of thoughts to the largest emerging markets, China and India, Johnson said. But I think what gets lost in that big picture of big emerging markets is, surprisingly, women. Women themselves are an emerging market. There are more and more women entering into the workforce themselves. More and more of them are making more money. they can compete with China and India as an emerging market. So next time, don't make this mistake again. Okay, now, let me go. This takes me to the second point that today was so present, you know, in the discussion. And the whole discussion about pessimism versus optimism. I liked a lot also what Celso Amorim said, you know, that you look more naive when you say that you are optimistic, but thank you very much, Rajiv. We feel, you know, more accompanied now. And let me mention that when we were in the 80s in Latin America, and from ECLAC, we said that that was the lost decade of Latin America. You know, the 80s were so hard on us, on poverty, on inequality, on economic decline. And I was talking to a friend that came from the human rights community. And she once told me, you are so wrong, because for the human rights community, the 80s were not a lost decade, because was the decade that we returned to democracy and returned to really, you know, put human rights in the center of the political agenda. So for the human rights community, it wasn't a lost decade. Why do I bring it to you today? Because now when we are talking about Latin America, I really believe that to not see the huge improvement in the life of people that has happened in the last 20 years in Latin America is a big mistake. Because many people are even asking, has Latin America gone through a lost decade again? Because now we are in a desacceleration, you know, we are not growing enough, we didn't do anything right. And I think that that's really misleading for the region. Because Latin America has invested in its people during the last decade. Much more education, much more health, less poverty. Even for a region that is the most unequal of the world, even a little bit less inequality. And that's why when you look at the social structure of the region today, it's completely different from the one we had before. In Latin America today, for the first time, the middle classes are more numerous than the poor. In average, there is a huge diversity in the region, and we can talk about it. But for the first time, we have poverty at around 28%, the middle classes at around 34% of the population, and there is this group that has gone out of poverty. But you cannot say they are part of the middle class yet. They are very vulnerable. They look pretty much still like the poor. Yeah, they have no social protection. We have not, you know, managed to bring them all into the formal workforce. That is 37% of the population. But still, you know, this is a completely different panorama than the panorama that we had before. So to say that we were just in a big party during the last 10 years. We haven't done anything for anybody. And we didn't save for the bad times. That is true. We didn't save. And we will talk about also the dark side or the shadows, let's put it that way. But I think that it will be a huge mistake not to understand that Latin America is today more prepared than ever to face the bad times. And we are going through bad times. Yes, there is desacceleration, you know, there are, you know, the sources of growth, you know, have to be found again. We have been, as the rest of the world, you know, suffering from an economy in the world that is not picking up. Only the U.S. is good news, as very well President Fernandez said in his address, you know. Europe is not picking up, and Asia is declining, and so obviously we are also suffering from it, but we are not in the 80s. And so let me send this second message to you. I really believe that the... Can I say this? We have to wake them up, yes? the Anglo-Saxon press is excessively pessimistic with respect to Latin America. I think that the economic fundamentals don't give enough for the things I have been reading in the press about the region. Not even in terms of Brazil, that is, you know, such an important country.
They have to sell.
No, okay, but the problem is that it has a real effect. It has a real effect in the markets. It has a real effect in the investment. And I think that there is a lot of lack of good information. That's a good way to put it. Lack of good information about what is happening in the region. We need more expertise about Latin America without only big headlines. And that will be very important for the future and for how we will manage bad times, but not a general crisis like we had in the 80s. So to connect today with the situation of the 80s is really misleading with respect to the future of Latin America. So in that sense, I am in the more optimistic side. You know, even with respect to Brazil, that has been, you know, such an important part of the discussion, I would say that if you look at Brazil's fundamentals, you can understand that probably the political situation is more important to explain what is happening than the economic fundamentals of the country. And let me say, Joao, not only because I like you, but that Brazil is a big country. It's there. It's not a fashion. It's there to stay. And I believe...
Hopefully.
And I believe that, you know, if we do the right things, we can really get out of this bad cycle. So let me just finish saying my third point. We did a lot of things right, and that's why I'm optimistic. But there were things we didn't do. And that, like Enrique Garcia said when he opened up, maybe, and Jose Luis, you know, said that again when we were talking outside, here we have an opportunity. What we didn't diversify the economy. Guillermo Perry used to put it in a very nice phrase. He said, we were able to manage well the macroeconomics, but we did nothing in the microeconomics, in the productive structure, in the efficiency of the productive sectors, and in the investment in science and technology. And that is what we need to do today. So the big question is, how are we going to be able to do that with such a narrow fiscal space and monetary policy space? And I think that the answer is to say that we have to go back to the issue of incentives. We have to go back to politics and policy, because that is what will, you know, set the rules of the game of Latin America in the future. We have to go back to, you know, better institutions, to the incentive of the private sector to recover, you know, the confidence in the economy and in the countries. And we need to convince society that we are going to do that in a transparent and with better governance. And here, I have said that we are seeing in Latin America the same we are seeing in the world. That is that what many times in the development literature we studied, that is that the economy and society are going more rapidly than institutions. So in these institutions are backward or rezagadas, how do you say? Slower to change, you know, than society and than the economy. And so now we need to do that. We need to go back to institutional change. We need to understand that the new middle classes, that the youth of the region, that is the highest number of young people we have ever had ever and the most educated we have ever had. It's a huge opportunity, but it's also a huge responsibility because they demand better institutions, not only access, but quality of education and health. They demand better governance. They demand less corruption. They demand more transparency. And Guillermo is also turning his eyes that I have to stop. So let me just say that there is a lot of room for improvement at the micro level, you know, bringing back the confidence of the private sector to invest and to do the right things and, you know, a framework of regulation and transparency that is needed. And it's not all about financing. It's about bringing society and the private sector to collaborate for an agenda that is different from the past but takes stock and potentiate the past. So my final point, and it's really, Guillermo, is the following. Today we have talked a lot about fraternity and values. And so I just want to finish with this reflection, you know. I think that part of why we need more of that is because the world is more inclusive today than it ever was. And so there is more need for to harmonize, like Don Enrique said, to harmonize different visions of the world. But I think that there is, we lived a lot in a paradigm of the melting pot. In a way, what we considered the first best was to stop being new, given something to what all of us will be. But we will be all the same. Now I think that we have to change, that we have to, you know, to change to a paradigm of what Amartya Sen calls inclusive identities. The important thing is not to stop being you, but that being you, having your identity, doesn't preclude including the other. That doesn't stop you from being able to include the other in you. You know, I always say I am very Costa Rican, very Central American, very Latin American, very Ibero-American, and they don't have to be conflicting. To be one, to have one identity, doesn't have to mean to have only that identity, only being that. That is to reject the other. I hope that Latin America, that is a region of peace, can contribute to a world, going back to your question, Guillermo, to a world that really believes in diversity and that will build including identities for the future. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Rebecca. I'm sure that you will have, in a few minutes, a lot of questions after the intervention. Now, I will give the floor to João Carlos Ferraz. He's the director of the NDS in Brazil. He has a long and important career in the economic field and professor at different universities. I'm sure that he is going to tell very important things about the economy.
Or not?
Thanks, Guilherme. I must thank the LSE and CAF for organizing this event. I want to play with the word the past and present and future, with the time, yeah? And its associated challenge for us. Now, to do that, I'm going to be inspired by another Portuguese poet, that he has a very interesting poem in one of the verses that he took from a saying that stayed in history from the year 100 of a Roman general when he was in a boat and all the marines were frightened because of the weather. And the expression is, navegar é preciso, viver não é preciso. The translation is, you know, the literal translation is to sail is necessary, to live is not. Now this is, yeah, strange, but it's not, because it's a poem that is around the notion that facing the unknown, creativity is necessary. Yeah? Facing the unknown, there's uncertainty, innovation is necessary. And it's even more important than the life of one. That's how generous and deep Fernando Pessoa. So I'm going to take the issues that are, you know, the highlights of what has been happening, and see to what extent we have innovated and we have been creative. Yeah. So the first one is inclusion. Yeah. Have we managed to do?
Yes.
Were we innovative and creative?
Yes.
So this is one point, you know, and we don't inclusion with efficiency. You know, the money directly and no bureaucracy. Two. The macro management. If we compare in our history, you know, from the debt crisis before and what we have done after, we have been creative. We have innovated, you know, the exchange flexibility, the targeting, and the fiscal responsibility. These are issues that were, you know, summarizing a macroeconomic policy in these three things. Most, you know, I'm sort of giving the average here. Yeah. Even if some have derailed, but these are issues that stay, and this is a conquest. Yeah. So, although prudence is still necessary, complacency is not, but it's there. Now, the third one that apparently my country is, you know, they talk a lot about these things, you know, all these scandals. Fighting corruption. We have innovated. We have created new instruments. We have produced a new generation of prosecutors and fiscals and that have the rule of the law as a guide. And it's not only my country, it's many other countries. Meanwhile, we hear those people that, you know, they are following the rules. Some multinationals, well-known multinationals, are showing off their dark side, even for the empire. So, we have. It's still, you know, a fight to go, but the fourth point, our financial industry. I don't think we have innovated enough. We're very much geared toward the consumption and the short term, but not enough for the long term. We're still a shallow financial industry. If we look at production, and this, you know, Rebecca was already saying, or if we look, you know, the real economy, even in infra, very low creativity. There are some, but you know, we choose one case and here the case of that country, but remains cases, remains islands, not archipelago. And even in infra, we have innovated. In some countries, on the way that we do the PPPs, and this is serving as example to others, but has not been diffused enough. Now, if we look, now this is, you know, my short story of creativity and our recent past and present. Now, if we look ourselves and the world, and given what I learned today. Now, there are new kids on the block, You know, and the probability, although, you know, plain probability is not a good thing on these issues, but conflictive multipolarity is a probability. Now I'm going to shift a bit. Can Latin Americans, can our leaders be innovative, like you say, and creative, and introduce a different agenda or contribute to a different agenda to this potentially conflictive multipolarity? Given that we are a peaceful region, as you mentioned, maybe there is a potential there. You know, leaders like President Fernandez here, and you know, the storyline, it's very clear. You know, negotiation rather than to stereotype, you know, people as some nations do. You know, these are the bad guys, these are the good guys, the bad and good. This is too simple in a complex world. Now, there is going to be a world of low growth. And more important, changing engines of growth. 5 years ago, we were saying, you know, that the emerging were, and now the U.S. The engines are changing. So, can we design a flexible strategy to face this changing world? Not only in terms of our macro policies, but also in terms of our insertion in the different markets. It will call for a lot of flexibility. Are we prepared for that? There is one issue that I think is related to that, that I think we have a high potential. The inclusion that I mentioned before did not happen only in our region. It happened everywhere, and the previous panel mentioned this. Now, the demand for goods and service, for food, for energy, even if the prices of commodities are up. But, you know, if we look 20, 30 years, well, can we explore, and we have the basic capabilities very much based on our reserves and our cost competitiveness and the research that we did on the agro and the logistics that we developed. Can we use these competences to go for this demand, but observing the trends, especially can we provide sustainable food and energy security to others? Sustainable. The issue of sustainability is here to stay. And can we, our production base, can we use that? And then final word, Don Enrique, for our developing financial institutions, how to create and innovate to finance uncertainty? This is mind-boggling. But, you know, if we take the 4 or 5 issues that we deal with, infrastructure, yeah? Full of uncertainty because, you know, we cannot foresee for certain the return for long term. Innovation, unpredictable. Small and medium size access, you know, the balance sheet, delinquency rates are high. Low carbon, you know, the low carbon is not, you know, it's total uncertainty. To what extent we have to be voluntary? I don't know if the word is voluntary, but we have to, yeah, to go ahead. And the macro stability that will come, and of course, when macro stability comes, the banks pull the brakes, and because they look not the market share, they look at the Basel, and how to be contracyclical. But for that period that is needed, the contracyclical, and not extend beyond. So these are the issues that we really have to think that the institutions that we work for. So we need institutions taking over. With a DNA fit to face uncertainty, but creativity is necessary. So this is why navegar é preciso, viver não é preciso. Thank you.
Thank you.
I will end with another Brazilian poem.
But this is not the <I'm laughs>
no. This is our that we are ready to share.
Copyright is important.
Yes, exactly.
It's clear that we have to modernize the institutions and we have to update the institutions. But and especially the quality of institutions and the policies should be improved. I can say all the day we have been speaking about this. Now, I have the privilege to present José Luis Machinea. José Luis is a distinguished professor. He was a former executive director of the ECLA.
Our ex-boss, huh?
Yes, yeah. Both of us.
Oh, our ex-boss.
This is the ECLA table.
No, yes. This is why he's left. He's the boss. We both work at CEPAL.
And José Luis was also Minister of Economy in Argentina and President of the Central Bank of Argentina. José Luis, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Guillermo. Let me begin by saying that I want to thank CAF and the London of Business Economics for this invitation. I don't have anything to add to what Rebecca and Joao have said about the last 10, 15 years of Latin America. Perhaps just to underline that we have a high rate of growth, we have a sharp reduction in poverty, and a better distribution of income. And I think that's the difference, perhaps, with the rest of the world. The rest of the world have inclusion, but in Latin America, the importance of income distribution was larger than in other regions of the world. And, still we have a very bad income distribution, but there was a change there. And I don't have anything to add also to the current situation in the world economy to what President Fernandez have told us. Let me ask you and ask myself why Latin America and especially South America have performed worse during the last year than the rest of developing regions. And you can say, well, there are different reasons for that. One of them, without any doubt, is that the South America, Latin America and South America in particular, have a larger proportion of natural resources in our export. Yes. Okay? But then the question is, why? In the ascending phase of term of trade, also Latin America performs worse than the rest of developing countries. You have the answer there, no? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I want to say that it's not only about the world situation, it's not only about the term of trade, it's we have to ask for additional factors. And I think that the main factor behind this is what happened with productivity in Latin America, and I want to come back on this issue. But before that, I want to say that we face the current situation, and the question is what can be done in the short run and what can be done in the medium term. So talking about the short run, I am asking myself what can be done in terms of monetary policy, what can be done in terms of the exchange rate policy, and what can be done in terms of fiscal policy. And I think that the alternative that most of the emerging markets face today is that we have to the alternative of increasing interest rate or devalue the currencies to compensate what's going on on the international arena. So China decided for devaluating the currency, losing some reserve, but not increasing interest rate. But of course, the we don't have the margin, or the margin are way lower in Latin America than in China. So what to do? Seems to me that it's quite difficult to answer that question. It depends on the particular characteristic of each country. What is the credibility of monetary policy in each country? Which is the rate of inflation in each country? Which is the liabilities, dollarization of liabilities in the private and the public sector in different countries? No? I have the bias to say that it would prefer even a large devaluation more than increasing interest rate. But again, it depends. Okay. So, but there is a third option. And the third option is that talking about governance, we need a stronger global financial safety net. And that is something that we are going to solve right now. We know that we have more flexibility from the International Monetary Fund during the last year, but it's not enough. Take the case of the net that we have between or among developed countries. We don't have the same net among developing countries, and we don't have the possibility to access more money in a situation like this. So I think that stronger global financial safety net is something that needs to be done. On the fiscal side, I think that the leeway is not much higher. And it's not much higher because although the fiscal debt declined until 2011, from then on, fiscal debt began to increase in Latin America. You have cases, sorry to say that, of Brazil, yes, with a debt to GDP of around 70%. And we have several Latin American countries, among them all Central American countries, where the ratio of debt to GDP is between 40 and 50%. So that level of debt is relatively high. So relatively high, 40, 50%. And but on top of that, let me tell you that on top of that, you have a decrease in revenues because you have recession and you have a decrease in international prices. So I think that there is just a limit margin in terms of fiscal policy. If we can find some additional revenues, I think that we should spend that in infrastructure. But first we have to find that. What Rebecca was telling me, and I agree with her, that perhaps changing the incentive, the institutions, we can call once again the private sector to see if they can participate in the expansion and infrastructure in Latin America. And then we have the medium-term challenges. And I would say that the main challenge, I have two that I want to mention, but both are related to the diversification of economic structure. And that is something that Joao and Rebecca have already mentioned. And the first one is the productivity. The growth productivity has been very low, or very slow in Latin America. And so, but it's not only that. The region has not been able to create capabilities during this period. For that, I mean, we have not been able to increase, to improve the quality of education. We have not invest more money in research and development. We haven't increased the amount of patents in innovation. We have not improved our infrastructure. In some cases, we have not improved our institutions. Those capabilities are the main challenge that we have ahead if we want to increase the productivity from then on, from now on. And the second issue is diversification of exports, because without any doubt, the low diversification of our export increase the volatility of the countries of the region. And I think that, of course, the trade is not growing. President Fernandez also mentioned that it's not growing. The volume of trade is growing below the GDP growth. And that is a problem. But I want to say something that we have been saying in Latin America during the last 60 years, as my sister Ricker remembered quite well, that we should go for a better regional integration, for regional integration. But we have been saying this during 60 years, and we have not been able to make too much progress, with the exception of Central American countries. We have that problem. That is something that we should try, but let's see. And talking about productivity, I was reading the other day the latest report of the BIS, and they say something that, because the productivity problem is not only a problem of Latin America, it's a problem of China, it's a problem of developed countries, it's a problem of many countries around the world. And they say monetary policy has taken too much of the burden of boosting output, while the productivity growth continues to decline. That means that monetary policy should be part of the answer, but cannot be the whole answer. And that is what has happened, it seems to me, during the last 10 years. And that could create distortion, as you know. It could create distortion in terms of resource allocation, distortion because it creates some bubbles in the markets. So I think that the world should move more to think about fiscal policy or a structural measure to improve productivity in terms of, and that should be the role of monetary policy should be less than the current one. And I want to mention something about the international monetary system, because what happened with the international monetary system is that has spread easy monetary and financial conditions in the core economies through exchange rate and capital flows. And that is what happened in developing countries suffered during the last year, and developing countries in Latin America suffered during the last year with the appreciation of the exchange rate as a consequence of that. And now we have a change, no? There is an increase in interest rate, and the central bank of we have monetary easing in Europe and monetary easing in Japan, and so there is dollar appreciation. So everybody that takes and borrows some money in dollars 2 or 3 years ago, now we have a problem, no? What I'm trying to say is that the volatility of the world economy is something that need to be we have to deal with that. And so I just want to add that the main problem, as everybody knows, of the macroeconomic stability is that there is lack of policy dialogue, there is lack of cooperation at the world level. And if we don't be able to solve that problem, I think that we are going to have the uncertainty is going to increase, and we are going to have international context that is going to be much worse, perhaps, than the one that we have today.
Thank you.
I believe that we have time for 2 or 3 questions, please.
Can I
ask you? José Luis, the issue of regional integration in the ratio of fiscal, especially the fiscal, what comes, and as you mentioned, Brazil is going through this challenge associated with the fiscal. There are two dimensions that is we have to take into consideration. First one, that the debt, the gross debt, a large proportion of the growth debt are those repo operations that are done in order to build the reserves. Mm-hmm. So there is a cost of building the reserves that will affect. So and we have to make this clear, but it's not the main point. But the main point that I want to make is, I think I'm positively hopeful for the case of Brazil, because finally, the fiscal agenda is on the table. In 1994, when Ariel came, it was not. Levy will be recognized, you know, although he was just 1 year, because of his stubbornness to put the fiscal agenda on the table. Now, I think the big challenge of the fiscal is because, although the monetary policy goes to the central bank and, now the fiscal goes through Congress. Every country has a problem with the fiscal policy because it goes through Congress and it hits each of the congressmen and its own interests. So there is a political dimension of the fiscal policy that is not considered enough on the level of its importance. On the integration, we have two words. One, the integration market, there must be attractive markets for companies to integrate. And I think one key component of this is on the logistics, on our low intra-regional logistics that puts the cost of our business absurdly high. So,
But.
Here we go.
What are we going to do? Are we going to answer to him or are we taking some questions?
Maybe we will take questions.
And when we answer those questions, we answer to Joao.
Questions?
Okay.
Thank you. Well, first of all, let me thank CAF and LSE for organizing this highly interesting conference once again. My name is Felipe Domingues. I come from Portugal, from the Institute for the Promotion of Latin America. My question is a little bit off topic. It regards the TTIP. If the TTIP negotiation, so this huge free trade agreement between the United States and the European Union, if it goes through, what are the implications to the region, to Latin America? And especially, I would like to know how does the CEGIP look at this, bearing in mind that the CEGIP has some strong lobbying in Europe, obviously because you are in Europe, and that you bring together all of Latin American countries. And never forget, the two European countries that are best friends with Latin America, probably the only two ones that are really available and willing to help Latin America, obviously defending also their own interests, but also defending and helping Latin America. Thank you.
Another question? Take Paul. Then, who is going to answer the first question?
Okay. No, let me, because it's also relevant to the integration question, yes? Let me say that I believe, as it was said in the morning, that the reason why the Alianza del Pacifico, enter into the Trans-Pacific trade agreement is precisely because together they can negotiate much, much better in terms of Asia. And there were no conditions for other countries of Latin America to join at that moment. But then what happens in the Atlantic? Because the Trans-Pacific included the South, but the TTIP is a North alliance. It's only the North Atlantic that are discussing the TTIP. And Latin America and the Caribbean has precisely the condition that it has both. It has the Pacific and it has the Atlantic. So we are worried that an Atlantic discussion is happening with nothing happening in the South Atlantic. And that's our first concern. So I think that there are two things that are important for us. First, the inclusion or at least the dialogue between Mercosur and the Pacific Alliance in Latin America. Chile is making a huge effort for that to happen. And I hope we could see a Mercosur-Mexico also agreement that will bring like the two extremes of the region together. Second, what will happen with the discussion of the association with Europe of Mercosur? Because that will, in a way, if that will happen, if Mercosur will make an agreement or of association with Europe, we will have all countries of Latin America having an agreement with Europe, with the exception of Venezuela and Bolivia. So it's a huge platform, you know, in terms of on the Atlantic side, too. And thirdly, let me say something that Enrique Iglesias always say. We have to avoid to be divided in the region between the Pacific and the Atlantic, because we need both. Our bet has to be for both. Mm. And so let me go to the regional integration. Mm. I really believe much more is happening in real life in terms of integration in Latin America than the discussion among governments. What I'm trying to say is that we are in a moment in which the bottom up to integration is very strong. Countries, people integration, but you know also the productive integration through the what we call the multilatinas or the enterprises, firms, whatever, corporations, you know, is incredibly strong in the region. You know, more and more business are cross-country in Latin America. And in a way, they are making the integration above only the government's, you know, formal agreements. So now the agenda that Aladi has put forward, that is an agenda to facilitate that process much more and to densify the exchange and the trade between the countries, you know, that now probably is not the same time as, you know, I participated in the Central American Agreement and, you know, in the trade union. We're not discussing customs anymore or, you know, nomenclature anymore. You know, this is more about real production, real life integration. And I think that much more is happening than, you know, we are acknowledging in terms of economic integration in the region, of social integration, of, you know, behavior that is much, you know, that considers the region much closer. And here I just, mercadeo, how do would you say, you know, a marketing point. You know, one of the things that we have decided as that comes from before, when Enrique was there, that is this academic mobility in the region, you know, is a very important bet also for that. Because the, you know, let me just say, 70% of the university students in Latin America are first time in their family to get to the university. That makes, you know, takes account of the huge social mobility that the region has, you know, gone through. But these kids won't have the possibility of going away because most of them have never left the place where they have lived. So they don't know anything about their neighbors or about the region or whatever. If we are talking really about integration, but if we are talking also about quality of education, you know, for us, academic mobility of teachers and students and scientists is, you know, brings both together, brings the whole issue of quality of education, of innovation, of opening your mind to the world, and brings also the issue of integration, understanding the rest of the region, and so be committed to a better integration in the future.
Thank you.
I want to stress this issue of about regional integration. Somebody mentioned that what is better is to have multilateral negotiations. And I totally agree, but we are not having multilateral negotiations. And we are having a free trade agreement. Free trade agreement are not the best. But when the rest of the world has free trade agreement, and the Mercosur is the only region that doesn't have any kind of trade agreement with the rest of the world, we have a problem. And we have a problem in the insertion of the rest of the world. So what I think is that besides regional integration, we should move in relation to that, to have an agreement with Alianza Pacifico, to have a regional integration in Latin America in general terms, and on top of that, we should be negotiated with the Asian countries and with Europe. We're quite close to have an agreement with Europe, for instance, and we didn't do it. So if we don't do anything in Mercosur, in the Atlantic, we have a problem.
Thank you. Well, this is the end of this session. I want to thank the panelists. I believe it has been so long. Now I pass the word to Chris Allen to organize the final session.
Okay. I'm really here to do to demonstrate that brevity is a good thing. And brevity in this particular case is brevity in thanking people. I would first thank all the speakers for participating in this, especially President Fernandez for doing the keynote. It's a wonderful way of shaping the event and giving us some sense of the certainties of uncertainty. I'd also like to thank President Enrique Garcia for constant support, friendship, and vision to have this sort of event. Andreas Jujeles as well for his support, CAF colleagues as well. Yes, I think a hand for all of them. And then on the LSE side of things, this wouldn't have happened without Caroline Varon, Alex Stankova, Tatiana Lujan, the LSE Latin American Student Society, and the indomitable Dr. Alvaro Mendez, who all of whom contributed enormously to turning this into a successful event. And then, of course, all of you who participated. And the best thing of all is that I can end on the note of saying that there's a wine reception downstairs. So that's just one flight down. You should be able to find it. And we look forward to seeing you next year. Thank you very much.